Gnadhan can be translated as perfect realization. Interpreted this way, kshanti is not just a concept, but an aspect, an expression of, as we say it, correct function from a place of clear understanding of our situation. Our understanding and action create kshanti and the other paramitas. Kshanti is not something outside of our own minds and our own hearts. We manifest it, we bring it to life as we meet each day and each moment. Our life experience and how it shapes the language we use and the way we relate with ourselves and others brings forth our understanding of and practice of kshanti and the other perfections. Outside of this, it doesn't exist. Therefore, we need not attain it, but rather only express it to the greatest degree that we can through our own behavior. So like with most talks, I can't put a talk like this together about something like this without consulting the teachings of those who are wiser than I am. One of these teachers is Robert Aitken Roshi, an American Zen master who passed away in 2010 at the age of 97. And he wrote a book on the paramitas entitled The Practice of Perfection. And here's the first paragraph from his chapter on kshanti. Kshanti, translated as forbearance and endurance, is the third paramita. It is not merely control of impatience, but the virtue that appears in the absence of hatred, repugnance, and malice. Like the other paramitas, it is an attitude that arises from bodhicitta rather than from guidelines imposed on the outside, from the outside. So again, we make it. He goes on in this first section to discuss the spirit of forgiveness. And referring to our relationship with other beings, he writes, "There are no exceptional circumstances that would justify other kinds of responses." No exceptional circumstances. So this is a tall order. And this is a demanding kind of practice that we are engaged in. When I read those words, my mind opens a little wider, even if only temporarily. There are times when we need to clamp down on our impulses and stop ourselves from acting in a harmful way. But we take another step into kshanti by letting go of unhelpful and harmful attitudes. I would say that this process requires striving to be aware as we can of our own unhelpful and unconscious conditioning and apply effort to changing it when we recognize it. This kind of practice is intentional. Thinking might be involved. I would add that this is most effectively accomplished in relationship to others. So remember that metaphor offered by Zen Master Sung San about potatoes and how they get clean by rubbing up against one another. So it's the same for us. And I wish it could be another way. We don't always know, and I would say usually don't know, when we're following our unhelpful conditioning. Think of the times when we've been really angry and felt justified about it, right? And then later, when we've calmed down, felt sad or even ashamed. This is a teaching that I need to embrace myself if I can only remember it. We're blind sometimes to how we are. Aitken Roshi talks about endurance and brings the focus to the experience of a person in relationship to themselves. He conveys we learn to accept and live our life with its alternating joys and miseries, while conscious of its brevity and its inevitable end. To practice kshanti is to remain aware of old age, sickness, and death. Getting in touch with how life is a step toward acceptance and peace, though perhaps not the peace we imagine it should be. We live our life, but not on our terms. Dukkha, Aitken Roshi said, is resistance to suffering. He calls it the anguish we feel when we don't want to suffer. So then liberation, it follows, is acceptance of what life brings and of its ending. The other teachings, primarily the other primary teachings I consulted on Kshanti were those of Thich Nhat Hanh. He defined Kshanti as inclusiveness. He sums it up like this. Inclusiveness is the capacity to receive, embrace, and transform. And of course, he was talking about receiving, embracing, and transforming hardship. He referred to teachings attributed to the Buddha, and those the images of earth, water, fire, and air. He said that Buddha gave these teachings to his son, Rahula, when Rahula was 18 years old. Earth, water, fire, and air, said the Buddha, are able to receive, embrace, and transform whatever comes to them. And with respect to water, he said that if you pour a handful of salt into a small bowl of water, then the water becomes undrinkable. But if you pour that same amount of salt into a large river, then the water remains drinkable. So Thich Nhat Hanh points out that, you know, the river is our heart. And if our heart is small, then even just one word or just one unjust deed will make us suffer. But if our heart is large, then we can receive, embrace, and transform injustice and not suffer. When I read this teaching, I'll confess, I feel overmatched. And maybe to myself I say, yeah, right. That sounds idealistic. You know, all I need to do is make my heart big. And whatever comes, I can embrace it and transform it and not suffer, and everybody else doesn't suffer either. But, of course, this means that I'm skeptical of my own ability to live in this way. But we always start where we are. Our mistakes don't cancel out our successes. And we can appreciate that we do respond to life in this way, at least some of the time, to some degree. We do have 10,000 years to get it right. Eikhen Roshi said Kshanti has three aspects. First, gentle forbearance. This is the term he used and defined as the spirit of forgiveness. Then endurance of hardship. So their endurance is highlighted. And then acceptance of the truth. With the spirit of forgiveness, he says, injury is forgiven and the occasion is used to reveal the essential harmony of all beings. This reminds me of the first of our four great vows. You know, sentient beings are numberless. We vow to awaken as one. And I think this is the same as Thich Nhat Hanh's teaching on the transformation of injury into compassion. Endurance of hardship and acceptance of the truth are simple ideas, easily sort of understood in a cognitive way, but understood and practiced at a very deep level, a very fundamental level. Again, this is easier said than done. Eikhen Roshi wrote that the fulfillment of Kshanti occurs when patience, when Kshanti itself is forgotten, that is where discomfort is not identified as suffering, and so there's nothing to bear. It is just our experience. Here's another way of saying it. Kshanti only appears when suffering appears. We are able to bear it patiently. Both Kshanti and suffering disappear when our acceptance of our experience is so complete that no judgment about hardship remains. This is also the fulfillment of the First Noble Truth, that is, of the ending of suffering. So, ultimately, there is no suffering and no Kshanti. But in the meantime, for those of us who have not attained Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi and have not become a Buddha, identifying how we suffer and how we respond to it is an important undertaking. I read parts of another work on the Paramitas, this one by the scholar Dale Wright. He refers to Kshanti as tolerance and writes this, "Mentally unaffected by abuse or danger, The ideal bodhisattva conserves their energy for positive steps toward awakening and is not overwhelmed by the self-destructive temptations of fearfulness and surrender, anger and retaliation. Self-controlled and powerful in composure, the bodhisattva maintains the stability and presence of mind to make the best possible move in a wide range of situations. Now, I have nothing to disagree with there, except maybe the emphasis on opposites. You know, we're a Zen group, though, and in Zen, we try not to get caught up in this opposites kinds of thinking, good and bad, self-control, powerful and composure. Yesterday, as I was working on this, something came to mind. I recollected hearing about a Zen master's death poem. I might have heard about this from Zen Master Zhangji, I'm not sure, but I think so. And the poem goes like this. I don't want to die! And so this demonstrates letting go of letting go and fully embracing our experience in the moment. But back to seriousness. As I was working on this talk, it occurred to me suddenly that, you know, really, as I read about this, I really feel like I've just almost just brushed up against this teaching a little bit, you know. Just haven't even scratched the surface. I was going to say I scratched the surface, but I'm not so sure, you know. It's just kind of rubbed up against me. And it's this this simple and yet profound and transformative teaching of Kshanti. Here's something from The Way of the Bodhisattva, the teachings of Shantideva. One of the stanzas in his long classic teaching. No evil is there similar to anger. No austerity to be compared with patience. Steep yourself, therefore, in patience, in all ways, urgently, with zeal. This is a vital teaching, and we can practice as intensively as we can in every moment. Here's a poem. This poem's not about letting go, but rather about embracing. I read that Shantideva said, only through suffering is there escape. Suffering, then, is this opportunity for us to learn. This poem, I think, offers the same wisdom. It's entitled, The Healing Time. Finally, on my way to yes, I bump into all the places where I said no to my life. All the untended wounds, the red and purple scars, those hieroglyphs of pain carved into my skin, my bones, those coded messages that send me down the wrong street again and again, where I find them, the old wounds, the old misdirections, and I lift them, one by one, close to my heart, and I say, holy, holy. That's a poem by Pesha Joyce Gertler. So thank you for being here today. Thank you for listening. And if there's anything we should talk about, let's talk about it. Again, when I was writing this and preparing, I was humbled by this teaching. I think with Zen, you know, there's such an emphasis on meditation and, you know, letting go of everything, even our own, you know, this idea of self. And Buddhism teaches non-self. And we believe and maybe can attain some kind of really open mind, clear mind, where we see things as they truly are, at least for a moment. Probably a lot of us have had some kind of experience where our, you know, some of our things we hold on to have dropped away. But I appreciate in studying, looking into the paramitas, that there's much to be gained through study, through what we call cognitive training, wisdom training, and using our minds. Language can only take us so far, but it can still take us to some kind of understanding sometimes.